Welcome to Chicago Jazz Revealed. I am Mike Jeffers, and we are live at Katerina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. The crowd's filing in here. Tonight on the show, in our second interview, we're going to actually have David Bloom from the Bloom School of Jazz. He's got a mega show coming up, and that's exactly how it's billed, as a mega show at Main Stage November 24th. So David's going to stop by. Also later in the show, we're going to have Kimberly Gordon stop in, talk about her new column. Kimberly's a vocalist in town that I'm sure many of our listeners know. But she's going to come in and talk a little bit about the new column that she's got featured on ChicagoJazz.com this month, called The Jazz Foodie. So we're going to get into that a little bit more with Kimberly. But first, I'm happy that we were able to get Marquise Hill to come in. His new recording, it's his third one. The Poet is doing great things on the charts across the country, and more and more people are recognizing his name and talking about him. So I'm just glad that he was available and able to stop in here on his busy schedule. How are you, Marquise?
I'm good. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, when I first got the recording sent to me, The Poet, you know, a lot of people put names on albums, and The Poet could mean a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. But from the first track, there's actually a poet on the recording, and I think that's, I don't know, maybe I haven't heard a lot of that mm-hmm. with any types of music, let alone with jazz. First, before we get into your background and everything, I mean, what's your inspiration to have a poet and kind of combine poetry with jazz music?
Yeah, I have a really good friend in town. His name is Kevin Sparks. We hang out a lot. He's a trumpet player. We just kind of mm-hmm. play. And one day we were hanging. I was playing a new composition that I was working on, and it ended up being the title track of the record, The Poet. But at the time, it was untitled, and I was playing it, and he was listening and just kind of hanging, checking it out. And he just said, you know, Marquise, your music is really, really poetic to me. You know, when I hear your music, it reminds me of well-written poetry. And he just kept using the term poetic poetry and things like that. So I was like, okay, it kind of stuck with me. So I end up naming that tune that I was working on at the time, The Poet. And then quickly after that, the music just started to come, and I just started writing these tunes kind of with that same vibe of that tune I was working on. And I just came up with the concept of naming the record The Poet.
Well, I think it all flows wonderfully, and we're going to hear a couple of tunes here, you know, during the show. But before we get too far into it, now your name all of a sudden, you seem to be performing with everybody.
You're trying to play with any and everybody that will have me.
I mean, man, you know, you've got tons of different things happening. And but first, why don't we find out a little bit about you now? Are you originally from Chicago?
From Chicago, born and raised Southside, the Chatham area on the Southside, 83rd and Vernon. Mm-hmm. I attended Dixon Elementary School. Then I went to Kenwood High School and Hyde Park.
Okay.
I went to Northern Illinois University for college for my undergrad. I got a bachelor's degree in music education. Then I did my grad degree at DePaul University, and I got a master's in jazz pedagogy.
Ah, okay. Well, let's jump back to your childhood, because, mm-hmm. I mean, how does somebody coming up decide to stick with trumpet? Now, I know many of our listeners probably, okay, you know, we're in fifth grade here, play trumpet.
Right.
But now it's actually your career, and actually you're really pushing forward and pushing the bounds on stuff. Was there somebody inspirational in Chicago, or somebody educationally that really you took to?
Yeah, well, actually, my first instrument in fourth grade, my very first instrument was a clarinet. I lived in a family building on the south side, so my older cousin lived above me, and she played the trumpet, so I would hear her practice. And, mm-hmm. of course, you want to be like your older sibling.
Right.
So I switched to trumpet, and I just kind of stuck with it. But in the fifth grade, Miss Diane Ellis, she's a great educator who teaches at Dixon Elementary School. She's been there for years.
Still there.
Still there.
Yeah.
She gave me my first jazz CD. It was a Lee Morgan record. And you don't really see too many fifth graders listening to Lee Morgan nowadays. And when I heard that record, it was just something about it. I wanted to do what they were doing on the record. So, I don't know, I was a fifth grader listening to jazz.
Yeah.
It just kind of stuck with me, and I listened to it throughout elementary school, throughout high school, college, and now this is what I want to do. It's my passion.
You know, and Lee Morgan, he's one of my favorite trumpet players too, mm-hmm. man. I mean, hard driving and but yet tonally beautiful.
Absolutely.
I mean, in fifth grade, you're listening to Lee Morgan.
Yeah, right.
You know, what were you? Was there even a jazz program at the school you
were
at?
There was. That's the thing. This is one of the only elementary schools that I know that has a full jazz program. There's a small group. There's a big band, and they just really engrave jazz into the students at a young age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and you got your music education degree, so you had to go do student teaching, and yep. I don't know if you've ever really had to – I don't know if you've used it yet where you actually ran a band program other than just student teaching and stuff.
I did. I taught out of college. I taught for 4 months at an elementary school where there was a small jazz band program. It was K through 8. So
right. So you had all of them?
I had all of them. Yeah, imagine that, right? K through 8. Yeah, it didn't last long. It was 4 months, and I had to get out of there.
That's you know, I mean, every time I see music band directors and stuff, I take my hat off to them because, I mean, and you know, but I mean, just the sheer numbers of kids and levels and interest mm-hmm. levels. It's just amazing to me. What made you want to go into music education?
Diane Ellis, seeing the effect that she had on students at a very young age. Myself, for instance, you know, she took a little kid from the South Side of Chicago and, you know, gave me a Lee Morgan CD. And now I'm a fan of jazz, you know. There's also another mentor of mine, Professor Ronald Carter, who actually teaches at Northern Illinois University. I came up through a program that he ran every summer on the South Side. It was called the South Shore Youth Jazz Ensemble. And this was my first paid gig. Every summer we would get paid minimum wage to come and rehearse. We'll do, you know, 6 or 7 concerts each summer.
Okay.
And it was a big band in the big band format. Those two really made me want to teach, and they showed me the effect that they can have on students, and I wanted to do the same thing.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting too is I know Ron Carter at DeKalb at Northern Illinois, and you know, you hear so many times about these. I don't know. You know, it's obviously not run through the public schools, the South Shore Jazz. So it's these organizations that are set up to really, you know, with jazz especially, you know, get the music into the schools, get the music different ways. Like the Jazz Institute does a great job mm-hmm. doing those things.
Yeah.
But this, I mean, this is something that all of a sudden, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you. I mean, this really had an effect. What other musicians maybe were with you?
Oh, man, there was a little.
Probably a lot came
out of
there,
a little
right?
group of us. Yeah. Kind of some Chicago names. This my really good friend of mine, Ryan Neither. Mm-hmm. Jabari Powell, alto saxophonist, mm-hmm. Zakiya Powell, she also worked for the Jazz Institute. She's a great trombonist. This guy, Michael Davenport, Isaiah Spencer went through the program, Kevin Neighbors, Norman Palm, Jerome Croswell. A lot of the musicians on the scene in Chicago went through that program.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
I mean, it is.
Yeah. And you know, really, you're setting it up and you're getting paid.
Yeah, getting paid. We're little kids getting paid to play jazz every summer.
Which is a beautiful thing because at that point, they're actually teaching you about business, too.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, wait a minute, you know, I should actually
pay
compensate sometimes for this mm-hmm. if I actually pay attention to get my stuff together. Yep. So you're going through high school. You're doing everything. The high school that you were at, big jazz program as well?
It was. That was one of the main reasons I went there. At the time, I graduated Kenwood 2005, so I entered 2001. Great jazz program. It was directed by William McClellan. He's not there anymore, but at the time, it was probably the best in the city.
Really?
Yeah, it was always a competition between Kenwood and Lincoln Park with the best jazz program. And it's funny, a lot of my buddies went to Lincoln Park, so it was kind of a little rivalry. But
and now you play together with them. You don't have any rivalry
time.
On the bandstand, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, so going through there, and then you ended up at Northern,
mm-hmm.
and then you ended up at DePaul
yep.
to get your master's in jazz pedagogy.
Mm-hmm.
During that whole time, I mean, were you – writing music? How did you get into the composition aspect of it?
I was. I started writing music in undergrad at NIU. Like I said, I was a music education major, so I wasn't taking as many of the jazz classes as I wanted to. So to kind of compensate with that, I would just kind of write my own music.
Yeah.
You know, I was taking conducting classes while they were taking jazz improv.
Right.
So But I was compensating that by just writing my own music.
Don't you think that, I mean, somebody that's driven like you, it's almost, sometimes it's almost better that, that you're doing all these other experiences, but you're so driven that you're learning stuff on your own because you're really pushing the boundaries.
Yeah. I think that's the best way.
Rather than have somebody... This is how you do it. This is how you do it. You're actually figuring things out and stuff. And
yeah, I agree. That's the best way. You know, if you want to learn something, go learn it yourself. You know,
right, right. You know? And I get help from other people here and there, but at least you're expanding what's going on. So you're at Northern, and you're actually writing tunes, and you're getting into that whole side of it. I mean, I'm always amazed. I mean, I'm a drummer, but I'm a drummer with a lot of things going on, so I don't have the thought process to sit down and actually work on, you know, composition stuff.
Right.
So I'm always intrigued by talking to composers and people that write, you know, an entire album like you just did and everything. Just, you know, thought process wise, I mean, just you sit down and your the ideas flow, or do you sit at a piano and then move it to trumpet with melodies, or how's your thought process work on that?
It's different every time. As of lately, though, I hear melody before anything. So I'll have my little iPhone, and I'll be driving. I hear a melody. I'll pull over, turn on the voice memo recorder, and I'll whistle the melody, and that'll be it. I'll let it sit in my phone. And
same way Charlie Parker did it, right? You know, with his iPhone.
Right. Yeah, and then I'll come back to it, listen to it, and just try to expand it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I've read a lot, and I've heard different composers talk about that. Mm-hmm. And when you get that melody, I always think that maybe the melody's the toughest part, because you get the melody, you know, AABA, whatever it's going to be with the melody, and then you can sit down and really experiment with the harmonics, right?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, yeah.
I mean, there's got to be so many variations on what you could do. Can it drive you crazy sometimes?
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about composition. You can go wherever with it. You know?
Yeah.
But I think we all hear melody and music differently, so that's why it's so cool when different composers, you know, write music. Mm-hmm. You know, like my music sounds different than, you know, a great player that I've been playing with in town, Matt Ullery, for instance.
Sure.
You know, completely different, but they're both good music, you know. And I actually talked to him. He's kind of has the same approach. He'll whistle a melody into his iPhone, and then he'll expand it later on. And same approach, but it's just amazing how differently we write, you know. So,
well, why don't we take a listen? This is a great time to take a listen
Perfect.
To a tune. And since we were talking about your new album, The Poet, and I'm sure they can get more information at MarquiseHill.com.
Yes, sir.
Why don't we take a listen? So I think we were talking before, we're going to do the first track.
Yeah.
Which is actually The Poet. Why don't you set it up? The name of the tune is Mary's Intro.
Yeah, this is a great friend of mine I met actually through another friend, Michael Avery, a great drummer in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Her name is Mary Lawson, and she has just a beautiful speaking voice. When I first met her, I heard her voice, and I was like, oh, wow. I have to do some work with you one day. So I came up with the groove behind her. And my buddy I was telling you about earlier, Kevin Sparks, actually wrote the poetry. And she just did a great job at reading it. So this is the opening track, and I just entitled it Mary's Intro.
Well, let's take a listen here to Mary's Intro from the poet Marquise Hill on WDCB 90.9 FM and ChicagoJazz.com.
Loved where goodness and truth shine. Can you hear it? That's the sound of listening, of hearing. Competition becoming creation. Skill become revelation. Power become love. Freedom music. Discipline and joy dance in this sound. If eyes on the sky, they feet on the ground. Swim, surf, and fly. You goodbye and bye. Pick, plie, and throw. Tomorrow's past, yesterday's hope. Into now. The red wash blues, anciently new, trace footprints, hallelujah, across sea and crying sky, a mile wide smile rides. Rain, O light. here below. Let us hear and sing, heal and swing the real.
All right, we're back here for a few more minutes with Marquise Hill, live at Katerina's. You're listening to This is Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers. And WDCB 90.9 FM and podcast on chicagojazz.com. So, Marquise, you went to college. You did everything. What was, like, your big, I don't want to say break, but, I mean, did you just start playing gigs and start pushing through Chicago with gigs? Or did you have something that really, like, all of a sudden, you know, got you into running your own group and you know, going that way?
Yeah, I would say definitely just making the connections through the South Shore Youth Jazz Ensemble, just hanging out with those people throughout the years. Also, I was a part of the Jazz Links Student Council
at
the Jazz Institute.
Yep.
And through that program, I had the opportunity to take private lessons with people like Ferez Whitted.
Ken Chaney, right?
Ken Chaney, yeah. Steve Berry, Mawada Bowden, Ari Brown, people like that. So I make those connections, and I'm watching them doing the things that I want to do. So I just kind of just took notes, and I went off to school. You know, DeKalb is only an hour and 15 minutes away, so I had a car. I would drive up almost, you know, 3-4 times a week just to see the concerts and go to the jam sessions and just kind of rub elbows with people. Also, I went to the Velvet Lounge in high school almost every week. Every Wednesday, there's a jam session. We would go, you know, get home at 2 a.m. and wake up and go to school at 8. You know, we were crazy. But, yeah, I think just making those connections kind of throughout my early, you know, career, high school and into college helped me, you know, get to where I am now.
Yeah. Well, and then, I mean, you know, when you got into you're writing compositions and you're hanging out, you're sitting in and stuff. You're a band leader too. I mean, you're running your group. I mean, when did you start, like, putting a group together and, like, okay, I'm going to start booking gigs? Because, you know, it's one thing to, like, play with other people and do it. It's another thing, right, to be a band leader. That's a whole other ball game at that point.
Yeah, I started when I graduated undergrad, 2009. Okay. I had the idea, like, you know, it's time to just put a band together and get my music out there. I think in this day and age, the way to stay relevant is to just produce good music for people to hear. So in 2010, I formed a band, and that's when I actually recorded my first album. I just wanted to get my voice out, my own personal sound and music out, so I just kind of did it.
Well, you know, and because, I mean, you're putting out albums, and you're traveling, and you're touring, and you're doing a lot of different things. You know, there's probably a lot of musicians, a lot of young musicians maybe listening to this as well. To me, because of all the different things I'm doing, and it just seems like to me, and maybe you can give me your thought on it, the best way to do stuff sometimes is not to wait for other people to do it. It's like, just do it. You do it. It's going to be more work, but it's better if you just do it rather than wait around for somebody else.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. Yeah, and that was my situation. I just did it. You know, I wanted to do it. I had the concept. I had the sound in my head. And one day I just said, okay, let's do it. Let's put a band together. And I did it. I called up friends that I like to play with and, you know, kind of created a band. And we started to play and book gigs. And I really started to get my own sound then when I had musicians to play the music. Because before, I would write these tunes, but I could never hear them because I didn't have a band to play them. But once I started to put different musicians together to try to form a band, and we would play and read through these songs, I would kind of hear and kind of develop my own sound.
And as a composer, I mean, that's got to be the key, is to get that band together. And, I mean, you mentioned Matt Ullery. I mean, you know, he's got his compositions.
It's
incredible. But, I mean, I couldn't imagine putting all that together and then not having
exactly
a group to be able to play it with, you know. So you put out a couple albums. Now The Poet hits, and this to me is a little bit is probably your most I don't know. I guess it's one of those CDs that is really you've pushed more than the other two in a bigger way. I guess is what I'm trying
to say.
Absolutely,
yeah.
What do you have in store? I mean, I know you have gigs coming up. You've got stuff coming up in the new year and everything. It looks like you're starting to play with larger, you know, headliner kind of things and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Just I'm going to continue to try to push this record and just continue to write good music and just keep putting out music. We've got a couple dates coming up in December. We're playing the Whistler in December. We're playing
Do you know the dates?
I should, shouldn't I? Oh, we're playing the Whistler December 3rd.
December 3rd, okay.
And we're playing Arts Incubator on the South Side December 2nd.
Where's that?
I think it's on 57th and Woodlawn, around that area, in the Hyde Park area.
Oh, okay.
So we're playing that December 2nd, and then with the Whistler the 3rd, and we're going to Detroit in January, and a couple things in February. Just really trying to push the band and book as much as I can. It's pretty difficult doing everything on your own, but you know, it's my passion and it's what I want to do, so I'm just going to do it.
Well,
like we're saying.
And also, I mean, you're probably you got the PR stuff going. It's being played on the radio now. It's like, okay, wait a minute.
This is
I got
to
start playing gigs.
Yeah.
So
this
it's
is the time to do it. Yeah.
It's the booking stuff that takes a little while, but there, of course, there's going to be plenty of information at MarquiseHill.com.
Yes, yes.
And we'll have a link from ChicagoJazz.com, WDCB.org. So why don't we hear another track off your CD? We were talking before we got on the air about playing B-Tune.
Yeah.
What's the background on B-Tune?
B-Tune is a tune that I wrote for a great R&B singer, actually. He came out with a record. His name is Bilal.
Okay.
Beautiful, just R&B singer, has a beautiful voice. And I was listening to a record that he released recently, and it just kind of motivated me to write this tune. I can totally hear him singing the song, so that's why I entitled it B-Tune.
Well, it was great to meet you.
Yeah, likewise.
And I'm glad you made it in. And we were talking before the show. We got to get your group in here maybe in the new year sometime and have you guys play live as well.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's more information at MarquiseHill.com, ChicagoJazz.com. But let's take a listen to B-Tune from The Poet here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB, and ChicagoJazz.com. Thank you. Support for WDCB and Chicago Jazz Revealed comes from the University of Chicago Presents, announcing its new series, Jazz at the Logan, at the Rava and David Logan Center for the Arts in Hyde Park. The season opens on October 25th with The Bad Plus and continues with Annette Cohen, Dick Hyman, Bill Charlop, and others. Single ticket and subscription information at chicagopresents.u, chicago.edu. Okay, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers. We're live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. Crowd always goes crazy. That was great. I'm glad Marquise Hill came in. And we have another Chicagoan here that has changed the face of jazz for over at least 25, 30 years. 30 years, right? 33 years? 35, 38 years. Wow. David Bloom is here from the Bloom School of Jazz. How are you, David?
Good.
It's a pleasure to have you, actually. And I'm glad we had somebody that you have worked with in the past, Ryan Cohen, a couple of weeks ago. And we were talking a little bit after the show, and I was planning on having you on at some point when we can really delve into the school and everything. But you have a mega concert coming up November 24th, and it is billed as a mega concert. And after you see the lineup, it is a mega concert because there's, what, over 30 musicians?
37.
37 musicians performing November 24th at Main Stage, which is up in Rogers Park on Morse Street. And shows at 4:30 and 7 p.m. And, of course, more information is at bloomschooljazz.com. But we're going to talk a little bit more, obviously a lot more about that. Now, you've been in running the Bloom School for 38 years, and my first question, just to get right into it, is how do you think the musicians have changed over 38 years from the time when you first started the school till now? Is there a progression of education already ingrained in people, or is it just the enthusiasm that they want to learn about jazz, or what are your feelings?
Well, with me, that's a very dangerous question.
I know, it's a very wide-open question.
Because
I know,
that could lead to about a 3.5-hour answer.
I know.
But what I will say is that, and this is very complicated, I'm going to try to strip it down as much as I can, but I think that when I got into jazz in the 60s, I mean, my first jazz record was Herbie Mann Live at the Village Gate. And I heard when I first heard that music, I felt that it was poetry. I mean, people were doing it purely for the sake of doing it, and that for me was very enticing. There was for no other reason. It wasn't for money. I mean, everybody needs to get paid in America, but.
Right.
I just remember hearing the purity of the musical impulse. And I think that there is, I mean, in this stage, a lot of the contexts for jazz, you know, comes from, you know, university jazz programs, you know, getting a degree in jazz pedagogy or jazz performance. Mm-hmm. It's very foreign to where I came from, where basically jazz was passed on from one person to another. My teacher, a great, great guitar player who was the contractor at Chess Records, a guy named Reginald Boyd, would have all kinds of instrumentalists come to his house. Mm-hmm. Because he had such a good ear, he would take Sonny Rollins phrases and Sonny Stitt. I mean, he had, by the time he died, he had about 200 books in his closet.
Oh, wow.
And so when I would go to his house in the 60s, he used to live out at 87th, right by the Moody Bible.
Okay,
Church,
yeah.
Bookstore.
Yeah.
And the reason I remember that is a tune called Be Grateful came out in the 70s, and the only place in Chicago I could buy it was the Moody Bible. But so Reggie was the person that made the jazz solos comprehensible.
Okay.
In other words, he would give people the phrases and they'd go and learn them and then they'd play them on their gig that night.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an incredible gift he gave. And he also had just a tremendous spirit and support for his students. I mean, it was just a, it was a, he was just one of the great sources of musical inspiration in Chicago.
Yeah.
So he helped me greatly because when I first went to him, I went to him because I wanted to learn the style that he called twiddling. And twiddling is the Curtis Mayfield rhythm and blues, you know, beautiful, you know, backup. Jimi Hendrix.
Okay.
I learned that style like on a tune, Little Wing, if
mm-hmm.
you've ever heard
sure,
that.
Sure, yeah.
So that comes from Curtis Mayfield and
okay.
Chicago. And so I went, I had gone to Reggie because I wanted to learn that style because I used to go to the Regal Theater every Tuesday at 47th and King Drive and hear the Miracles and the Temptations and James Brown and Otis Redding and all of the players. So Reggie, though, and I was listening to jazz, you know, at that time, but I couldn't crack the code.
Right.
So Reggie, after he humored me with this twiddling for about 2 months, now it was jazz all the way.
Okay.
And he was, every time I'd come there, we were working on progressions and phrasing. And he was a mentor to me.
Yeah.
Fantastic person.
Well, he also seems like somebody, I mean, and talking about the school that you have now, and I mean, I've come there and taken some lessons with you and we've done different things. And, you know, what you just described of Reggie is the same thing that you do, I think. You know, the giving back, the nurturing. You really care about this music and you really have a passion for it to be, I don't want to say played right, but for other people to have a passion for what they're doing. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, you've nailed it on the head, but for me, it goes way past jazz. I mean, jazz is a certain style.
Right.
Okay? You know, it's characterized by certain types of stylistic sounds. If it's straight ahead, it has a certain sound of eighth notes, triplets, and sixteenth mm-hmm. notes. If it's this, if it's that, if it's modal, it has long changes. But I think the most important thing and what's most interesting to me is that people can come to my school and not only learn materials, but start getting access to who they are. You know, because really the only way to play what I consider legitimate music is if you play yourself. And it's been said by numerous musicians in very eloquent ways. But that's it for me. And when if someone comes to my school and they go and perform and I see that I've helped them to get to themselves, what I call their birthright. I mean, when we're born with incredible potential
right.
to do many things through parenting and teaching teachers. A lot of people are convinced out of the potential they have. So they subscribe to a very conventional, proscribed way to act, because they don't want to deal with kind of it's the angst of dealing with not having so many assumptions about the way life is.
Mm,
I mean, if you wake up in the morning and you don't have all the assumptions lined up, you have to figure it out for that day.
Right.
And maybe you meet somebody at 1:30 that day, and if you listen to them carefully, they take you on a left turn you never would have taken if you have so many assumptions.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'd say what I'm trying to do with the school and what I feel I've been fairly successful with is supporting people and mentoring people to find what's important in themselves that they want to present to the world. That to me is a tremendous joy.
Yeah.
Just teaching someone a Charlie Parker, you know, lick, I don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's a billion other people who do that every day of the week. You know, no. Now, I'm not saying that to learn Charlie Parker and to listen to it, that shows you the nature of what this stuff is called. If you want to know the nature of bebop, you better listen to Charlie Parker and Clifford Brown and Dizzy and Bud Powell.
Right.
Otherwise, you're not going to learn the nature of something from people who are like seven or eight layers, you know, past them.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go to the trunk of the tree. Dave Liebman mentions that. Going to the trunk of the tree.
So, well, and you know, bringing up the trunk of the tree, and you know, talking about everything that we're talking about, and I'm trying not to ask the certain questions that I want to ask because we don't have enough time on the show right now. But of course, they can get more information at bloomschoolofjazz.com, and they can come to your mega concert on November 24th at Main Stage. Talking about the trunk of the tree, I mean, that's really what you're doing, I think, is that you're bringing them to the trunk of the tree. You're okay, maybe you're going to actually tell people, hey, you know what, you're not ready to play what you're trying to play because you don't know where it came from. But then also bringing in, and that's the thing that I got from you too, you know, you don't play drum set. I mean, you play some drum set, but you're not necessarily a drummer. But when you said, hey, Mike, come on over, I want to take you on a tour of the drums, I was like, okay, you know. Well, and it really, like, what, we were there for an hour, and it just, like, changed the whole way I was thinking about things. And I think that that's really something that a lot of educators have lost track on, is that you're actually, you know, supposed to get somebody's brain actually moving rather than just saying, you know, open up to page 8 and just blow through that and that's good. I mean, you're getting people's brains moving. And by putting on these shows that you're doing, I think it's a great showcase for people to come out and hear all these people because, I mean, it's not going to be just like some sort of a recital. I mean, this is passionate music that people are playing and they are really into it. I mean, is that a fair assumption?
It's right on it.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing for me is I am not a jazz Nazi, okay? I grew up playing, you know, Buddy Guy was my blues teacher in 1966. I saw him at a concert at University of Chicago, and I called him up the next day and asked him if he'd teach me how to play. And he said he'd never taught anybody. And I said, I'm sure it'll work out. And I said, what will you charge me? He said, oh, about $5. And I said, for how long? He says, as long as it takes. So, you know, for me, just getting back to, you know, the message. I mean, I love wonderful jazz. Okay, I can name right now, you know, 250 tracks.
Right.
Not to be confused with records, because you can buy a Blue Note record that has a couple, several tunes that are kind of okay,
mm-hmm.
and then there's two tunes that are fantastic.
Yep.
So I think that it's very important for people to talk about tracks. You know, what track is it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially in education. But for me, I saw Donnie McClurkin, a gospel singer, about 3 years ago, and I was more moved by that. I was shaken for about 2 weeks. And that rarely happens to me. Now, once in a while in jazz, once in a while that'll happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when there's like deep soul that supersedes mechanics. A lot of jazz to me, unfortunately, modern jazz is caught up in theory and mechanics. And when I listen to the Gene Ammons and the Lee Morgans, who I heard you talk about, when I hear that, I just hear pure soul.
Mm-hmm.
I hear pure soul. And the beautiful thing about pure soul is anybody who is human and who acknowledges their humanity will hear it.
Yeah.
And that's a fantastic experience, just to hear. And it confirms for you, you know, that you're on the right track and feeling things.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of pure soul, why don't we jump into a little bit of I think Mark Colby is from Chicago, and he's one of the you know, top saxophone players in town. But when you hear Mark play, you can hear that soul coming right mm-hmm. through the saxophone. So why don't we hear a track from Mark's CD, which is Mark Colby, Tenor Reverence. And no, wait, is it?
Hmm.
No, Tenor Reference. See, the lighting's so dark in here. Reference, Tenor Reference. isn't it? I can't read out of your glasses. Here, you read it. Why can't I see that? What's that say?
Yeah, it is tenor reference.
All right, tenor reference. All right, good. Ha! Tenor reference, and he recorded it live at the Jazz Showcase. Now, Mark is going to be performing on the Mega Concert on November 24th with his group, or is it with...
Well, I mean, Rob Parton and Mark took my Perfect Set class back in 2002, I think, or one. Rob had studied with me. Rob was the chairman of the jazz department at Roosevelt, and he studied with me for about a year, and then he asked me if I would come over to Roosevelt, and I taught there for a couple years. But Mark and Rob and three other guys took the Perfect Set class, and it was great to have, you know, pro players that really wanted to get deeper into their music. I really enjoy that, you know, because I believe, this might sound a tad immodest, but I feel that most players in Chicago, if they studied with me for like a month, would be at least 30-40% better. I just feel that. I mean, I've done it day in and day out. You know, one of the groups that was in, who's playing in the concert they were in 2 days ago, and right at the session, there was a 30-40% improvement.
No kidding.
And the main thing, and this is a powerful concept, when you hear a jazz group, the question is, how many missed opportunities are there to do things? I think when you and I were together that day, I think you found a lot more opportunities to say things that were right within your technical domain, but not top of mind.
Right.
And that to me is real impressive. I mean, one of the things I do in my teaching is on the blackboard, I draw a column, what you can do but don't, and what you can't do yet.
Mm-hmm.
And in that first column, what you can do but don't, it's enormous. Like, take dynamics.
Right.
I mean, you can play quiet, you can play loud, you can play screaming, but do you? And if we go out to hear a jazz group tonight, I will bet money that most of what we hear from the downbeat of a particular tune, there will be no more than about 10 dB of shift. So in effect, I call it the rinse cycle. You know, you put a quarter in and it goes till the tune's over and everybody plays a bunch of eighth notes and that's that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so the thing.
Well, and I think, you know, what you said too, it's not on people's minds because you get drawn in and, you know, you're looking at the people in the audience. You're thinking about how many people came in at the door. You're thinking about what you had for dinner. You're doing all this stuff. You're not solely committed to what's happening in that moment and forgetting everything else that's going on. So when you are, I think that just thinking about that stuff, it just changes everything, you know? But, I mean, how many people actually, like, think about that? I mean, just imagine going to your job if you're working somewhere and just thinking about, man, what could I do in this job right now that would be, you know? I mean, people would come up with all these concepts, but they don't. It's just right. Like, you know.
Well, I think you nailed it. I think the immediacy of the moment is what I think you and I and everybody else who got bit by the jazz bug, you know, what we like is that when you hear people who are in the midst of living their lives large, that's a fantastic thing. In other words, they could not be doing anything better in the world than what they're doing at that moment. And what I hear when I hear the Lee Morgans and the Gene Ammons and the Elvin Jones, that's what I feel. I don't hear that there's like 50 other options. I hear this is it for them.
Yeah.
And with a lot of players now, I'm hearing there's too many options.
Well, let's take a listen to Mark Colby. And we're going to hear Riley's Thing. And this is from his recording, Tenor Reference, live at the Jazz Showcase on WDCB 90.9 FM. And ChicagoJazz.com. All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers. We're live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. Of course, she has wonderful food here, and I see a lot of people partaking in the wonderful food. And then we also live music tonight after the show. Kimberly Gordon and Tom Muehlner will be performing, and we're going to have Kimberly on for a few minutes here at the end to talk about her new column, The Jazz Foodie, featured on ChicagoJazz.com. But we've got a few more minutes here with David Bloom from the Bloom School of Jazz. The Bloom School of Jazz.com for more information. And he has a concert coming up Sunday, November 24th. Shows at 4:30 and 7 p.m., and I know that there are some ticket prices. I'm sure all the information is on bloomschoolofjazz.com and main stage, the main stage up on Morse Avenue. I'm going to have a link on chicagojazz.com, WDCB.org. I'll have a link as well. And you've got over 37 musicians performing at the show. And you have, just looking through the website, getting some details, there's options where you can buy a ticket per show, or you can actually buy an option to be there all day. I'm just trying to wrap my head around how it is that you're going to have all these people perform, and it's going to be organized to a point where it's just programmed out. I mean, it's an amazing thing. I mean, are these all past and current students, or are they all still working through the school with you, or who's on the show?
Well, first of all, it's not so smooth. I wake up at 3:30 every morning, okay?
Okay. Okay, good.
And try to get back to sleep by about 6 for another hour. But the idea of this show, this is a celebration of individuality and individual expression. This is not a, quote, jazz concert, although with most jazz concerts now they have like 5 different styles of music,
right,
other than,
yeah,
jazz.
Right.
So that word from 1965 has gotten so wide, it really almost has lost meaning. It doesn't,
yeah,
mean anything anymore.
Exactly.
You know, because it's so wide. But in this concert, we'll have the following styles. First of all, we'll have straight-ahead jazz players. I mean, I consider Mark Colby and Rob Parton and, mm-hmm, and X amount of other people straight ahead, Pat Fleming, who's a very, very fine jazz guitar player, is also a really good rhythm and blues player in blues, and he's going to do a little set. But one of my ideas for this was to have kind of a dim sum, dim sum, so that nothing lasts too long. In other words, if a musician might come in and do 2 songs, they might do 1 song. I have 4 vocalists, mm-hmm, who are songwriters, Spider Saloff being one. She's going to do 3 songs. And then a fantastic singer named Jewel Tansey, she's going to be 1 or 2. So I really like the idea, and it's a little bit of a risk because sometimes people want to hear, you know, one. Especially if they like it, they want to hear it for a long
more,
time.
More,
they,
yeah,
want to hear a long time. So this kind of dim sum, you know, version, you know, it's a risk. But I have a feeling because the talent is so varied and interesting, I'm hoping that it goes over. I mean, when I was growing up and you had the Billboard Top 100, it was not segmented. That happened a little bit later on due to advertising.
Right.
Okay. So that now you have urban this and you have salsa and you have like 19 different classifications, yep, because the advertisers want to buy that market.
Mm-hmm.
They want to buy that. So back in 1965, you had the top 100 and that was it. And you might have Herbie Mann and then you might have a rhythm and blues, you might have blues. And that was the beauty of radio back then, is that you heard many different genres of music that you will not hear if you go to one station now.
Yeah.
Generally, you're going to hear one genre of music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like the fact that DCB does jazz, and I used to have a close friend of mine, Arnie Rosenthal, who was a commercial producer and photographer and just a Renaissance man in general. He used to pick me up at my school on Wabash, the one 5 years ago before I moved
came
back. And he'd have DCB on, and I would just be in awe that one tune after another was the real stuff. I mean, you'd have Art Blakey, yeah, Free For All, then you'd have, you know, Lee Morgan playing this or that, you know, Ugetsu or whatever, you know, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always, you know, really felt that, you know, just to go to some place and hear the real stuff is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so with this concert, you've got Mark Colby, Spider Saloff, I'm going to let you continue naming some names.
I'll name them kind of by category.
Okay.
I have a singer-songwriter named Phil Bruni that is kind of a Tom Waitsian,
mm-hmm.
kind of, you know, some humor and some cynicism. And then I have Spider, who writes really, really good tunes, period.
Yep.
This woman named Jewel Tansey is doing a premiere of one of her tunes called The Future Me. Very profound tune. And then I have a singer, cello player, songwriter coming in from Minneapolis who has been doing Skype lessons with me for a couple years, and she was in town before that and studied with me, you know, 10 years, named Martha Larson, and she's doing some kind of Americana blues.
Okay.
And just really great stuff. And then I have a drummer who I'm very proud of named Tim Keenan. And what we're doing with him is what we call sonic short stories. And the idea here is to play a story that people can, where they can hear a human interaction. For example, one of the stories that was an assignment to him is called The Juggler. And the idea is that it's about a world-class juggler who's in a horrible car accident and has to learn how to juggle again. And he plays this on the drums.
Another one is called
Husband and Wife, in which the bass drum is the husband and the hi-hat foot is the wife. And we see what happens. So I've given him these arcs.
Yeah.
And, I mean, basically what I told him, and he's been with me on and off 15 years, I told him a couple years ago, I said, look, we can work just on jazz playing and you'll get 20-25% better. Or we can work on this concept where it's just you walking into a room with a drum set and telling stories. And now you're not competing with anybody in the world. It's just you.
Right.
Because who else is doing that?
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to that. We did a concert at a church about 3 weeks ago that went, you know, very well.
Mm-hmm.
You need a devout listener, though. You know, this cannot be someone who is looking for music as distraction. Won't work.
Right.
This is someone who has to listen for the storyline.
Yeah.
And we tell people the storyline before so that they can listen to
it. So then they really listen to it. They hear the themes and stuff.
But I think the whole idea here is seeing with your ears. You can see the situation.
Yeah. Well, you brought up Spider, and why don't we hear a tune from Spider?
That'd be great.
Off of her recording, her CD, Light Glass. And this is Spider and Steve Ramsdell. And we're going to hear actually the title track, Light Glass. And you can hear her and all of these other artists at the big mega concert for Bloom School of Jazz. Cool Heat is what it's called, November 24th at Main Stage. So let's take a listen to Spider Saloff here on WDCB 90.9 FM and ChicagoJazz.com.
Like glass, I see right through him. He thinks I never knew him. He didn't say just why he went away, and there's his silence, always his silence. Inside, his words unspoken, there lies a soul that's broken. He's lost to me, but now at last I see right through him like glass. Thank you. just why he went away, and there's his silence, always his silence inside, his words unspoken, there lies a soul that's broken, he's lost to me, but now
we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers, live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. And we've got a few more minutes with David Bloom. Crowd's going crazy. They're going nuts. So you mentioned that the Bloom School actually moved back over to Wabash. So you're now at 226 South Wabash on the 7th floor. And, of course, more information at bloomschoolofjazz.com. I'm assuming that's where people can find out information about upcoming courses, studying there, all the teachers that you have studying or teaching over there, including yourself, obviously. But the most important thing is the show, the mega concert, on November 24th, 4:30 and 7 p.m. at Main Stage. So we're going through all of this now. Now, how long did it take you to put this concert together?
Well, I tried to put the concert together for May, I think it was May 19th.
Okay.
And for one reason or another, the concert, the venue canceled. And I'd spent about 70 hours putting the concert together. Oh. So I was pretty, pretty pissed off. So we worked it out so that this date, the November 24th, will be the date. But I would say it's a total pervasive project. You know, I have a few people helping me.
Yeah.
You know, Paula Hoffman has been helping me tremendously. You know, arrange things and questioning me, which is always excellent.
It's good to have people question you.
Right.
Yeah.
And Ronaldo Sertain is the person who does all my artwork. He did the poster. And having people like that in your corner in the project, a guy named Eric Jackson is the video director.
Mm-hmm.
It really just helps so much.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, you can't put on a concert like this without other people helping you.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. Now, is this going to be something that you do annually? Because I know you do concerts with the school here and there, but this seems like a big undertaking.
I plan to go to Puerto Rico the day after and just relax.
Are you?
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Waking up at 3:30 every morning just like so worried about this, that, or the other thing. Because I'm basically the executive producer of a 7-camera video shoot.
Mm-hmm. On top of running
a 37-person concert. So I've had numerous of my...
And you know what the beauty of the whole thing is? Is that you put it all together, so you actually didn't have to do all this. So in the middle of the night when you wake up at 3:30 in the morning, you go, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done this. It's, nobody else is making me do this but myself. I have those same. I wake up in sweats as well, but you know.
Well, I'll tell you, man. You are a guy who is, you know, you're devout to making something happen. That's. I mean, I totally relate to you.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you and I are on the same page with stuff.
Yeah, we're cut from.
We have
the same
nightmares.
Yeah. That's beautiful. That is how you know you're soulmates.
That's right.
You know, you have the same nightmares. Yeah.
Well, let's hear one more track. Now, we were talking about this. This is Isabel Oliver, and she's going to be performing. She's a jazz harp player or just a harpist?
Jazz harpist from France. Her son is also going to be performing. His name is Raphael Boeuf, B-E-O-F,
mm-hmm.
and he's a wunderkind. I mean, this guy knows so much more than I knew when I was 16. He just turned 16 three days ago. And, I mean, this guy is deep. He's deep in terms of his knowledge. And mm-hmm. he's one of these, I mean, he is so about music. Every cell in his body is about music. It's really, it's a great thing. They came to me about 2 years ago, and from the first lesson, everybody was convinced this is a great, great hookup.
Yeah.
It was just great.
Well, let's take a listen to that. They're going to be performing.
Yeah. Together and separately.
Oh,
yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. So it's at Main Stage, November 24th, 4:37 p.m. More information at bloomschoolofjazz.com. The mega concert. We're going to go out listening to Isabel Oliver and her recording. And David, thanks as usual for coming in. And
Thank
I know
you
we're
going
to have
me.
To set something up to have you come back soon. And good luck with the concert.
Thank you.
Let's take a listen here on WDCB 90.9 FM and ChicagoJazz.com. Thank you. we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed, and joined by Kimberly Gordon. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Oh, the crowd's going crazy again. So you're getting ready to perform here, but I'm glad you are on this show tonight because we've got a couple of things that we're doing. First off, you are now contributing to ChicagoJazz.com, Chicago Jazz Magazine, as a writer and columnist.
I am.
And heading out on the town to see shows and review shows and do different things like that, which is something that I've wanted to get going for a long time, but manpower issues and everything else has prevented me from being able to do that. So I'm glad that you're doing that now because I think that you're more than capable of telling whether or not you like a concert.
Yes.
But the first thing that you're doing, well, I guess we'll talk about the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra coming in with Irvin Mayfield on November 21st.
Show.
And you went down to see the preview.
I did. There was a great sneak peek at the Chicago Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have the privilege of interviewing Irvin before the show. I got some wonderful moments with him. I'm transcribing the article now, and we're going to do a little preview review for the show coming up on the 21st at the Chicago Theater. It's going to be fantastic.
Excellent. And so they're coming in, and you mentioned to me that they're going to have Kurt Elling is going to be a guest.
Yes, Kurt Elling, American Idol finalist Haley Reinhart, a Wheeling native, Chicago native, is going to be featured as well. And the Preservation Hall band will be there, and Alan Toussaint.
Oh, wow.
So you're getting
five
acts. It's going to be a power show.
And, of course, we're gonna have – actually, we should probably set something up where you can do a little bit of a review after the fact. Maybe
Definitely.
We'll have you do a little something
– post.
A little post, wrap-up.
Yes.
But, of course, your review will be up on ChicagoJazz.com after the concert. And the other reason why I wanted you to come in is because we've been talking about doing this, and I know you've done several already. We've got them in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
But it's called the Jazz Foodie, and this is something that you're very passionate about because I know you, and you're very into the organic and clean food and good clean eating.
Slow
and
food.
Yes. And so you decided to start this column, and I know you've been bothering me for like a year about it, and I'm sorry. I'm slow.
I try not to bother anybody.
Well, you were very nice about it because I have certain people that bother me that aren't very nice about it. So you were very nice. But we finally got it happen and we finally got it going. And our first, the first one that we really put up just went up online on ChicagoJazz.com. I know we did Corinne Allison about a year ago, but I think in the series now we've got the column kind of got started on a regular basis. And you did Rose Colella.
Yes.
And her Nana's Meatballs.
And Rigatoni.
Why do you want to be the Jazz Foodie?
Well, you know, in my 25 years in this business and talking to musicians and being on the road with musicians, and I discovered that musicians and food are very closely connected. They love food. They have great stories to share about food experiences. So in my life as a jazz singer, and I'm a wife and mother, I combined both of my favorite things, jazz and food. So I tried to really focus on the story behind the artist's recipe. That's very important to me. Why is it their favorite recipe? And we found out a lot of interesting things about people and their food memories.
Yeah.
So it is a passion project for me, and I'm so glad that you are publishing it.
Well, I think it's a great concept, and I think it really works out well, especially on the online version, because we can add so many more photos. I know you shot some video of some things that we're going to start putting together, too.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, like this one that we have up, the Rose Colella, who's a vocalist in town, right, we should mention. She actually had the handwritten recipe from her Nana.
Mm-hmm.
So that's up there so people can actually see it.
Yes.
And it's really a cool concept and the way it's all laid out and everything.
Thanks.
You get a little background and stuff.
Yeah, and her Nana was also a singer back in the 30s. She traveled around and sang with big bands. So there's a legacy involved, and it was really nice to document that for Rose and for Nana's memory.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
So who else do you have coming up on the Jazz Foodie that people can look for?
Eric Scotty Reed. He is a Lincoln Center staple pianist. He's a friend of mine. He has a wonderful recipe coming up. Also, Diane Schur, I was fortunate enough to interview her last time she was in town, and she's sending me a nice recipe.
Of
course, I'm blanking out. I have so many.
I know, yeah.
Carmen Souza, wonderful South American singer. Mm-hmm. She's sending me a recipe for her Machu Picchu, which is a wonderful stew from her homeland. And her CD is also named Machu Picchu, so it's a great
timing. Ties in doubly.
Yeah,
then you can review the CD, too.
Of course. I wear many hats.
Yeah. Well, I know we got to get you going because you're going to perform, and
yes.
we want to record a tune and have a tune on the show. But mm-hmm. I just wanted to have you jump on real fast and
talk about this. I'm so glad. You know, this Urban Mayfield project is really important. He has a holistic approach to jazz, and I really admire that. I think Chicago has embraced him, and he's actually invited 10 of our local artists, our heroes, to join the orchestra, and he's written special arrangements for them as well. So it's exciting. I think everyone should try to come out, and I know there's a deal for tickets, buy one, get one free right now, limited time. So definitely come out to the show. It's going to be great.
Well, I know we'll have more information on ChicagoJazz.com for that.
Yes.
And well, thanks for coming in, we're going to have you on a regular basis now to talk all of these different the columns that you have going on. So you're turning into a media mogul yourself.
That's right.
Watch out.
That's right. The Jazz Foodie Show is next.
That's it. All right. Thanks, Kimberly.
Thank you, Mike.
And we'll look forward to taking a listen to you perform here in a second. And we will be back with more Chicago Jazz Revealed on 90.9 FM WDCB.